Austin Riley's out 6 to 8 weeks with a broken hand. Can the Atlanta Braves hold on and make the postseason? Let's talk about it. This is First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Tuesday, August 20th. I'm Lindsey Crosby with Athlon Sports. He's Christian Rau, managing editor of InsideTheCardinals.com. And Christian, not a ton of games yesterday. Obviously, we do have actual game results to cover. We'll get to that in the show. But I think the biggest news here that came out of Monday is the Atlanta Braves have lost third baseman Austin Riley for what they said is 6 to 8 weeks with a broken hand. He was hit by a, 97.1 mile an hour sinker from Jack Kochanowicz in the first inning of their series finale against the Angels on Sunday. And here's the, it feels like this might be the final blow for Atlanta. Because when you look at their season, Marcell Ozuna has been in the lineup the entire year, and he has been hot the entire year. Matt Olson has been in the lineup the entire year and has not been hot the entire year. But outside of him, every other player in that starting nine from opening day has missed some sort of time. Some of them weren't that bad. Orlando Arcia had missed a week with an abscessed tooth. Jared Kelnick missed just over a weekend with a potential wrist injury from a weird diving catch against Boston. But Ozzie Albies, second stint on the IL. Austin Riley missed 2 weeks for an intercostal strain and now is out for probably the rest of the regular season. Michael Harris misses 2 months. Ronald Acuña Jr. out for the entire year. Jorge Soler, they just got, missed the weekend with a hamstring strain suffered against the Giants last week. As of time of recording, Joel Sherman of the New York Post has said the Braves are coming close to an agreement with Gio Urshela, who was DFA'd by the Detroit Tigers, and ostensibly they would just plug him into third base and he'd be the everyday starter there. But no matter who they put in, is this it for the Atlanta Braves? Is this just the straw that broke the camel's back?
You know, I'm very hesitant to say it is because they have overcame every single obstacle that they've had to face this season. You mentioned all those other injuries that you talked about. And then, of course, the two big ones, Spencer Strider and Ronald Acuña Jr., who have been out for the season.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even get to the pitching staff. That was just right. The hitter injuries.
And you're just getting back Ronaldo Lopez, who was an all-star this year. Yeah, there's so much that you can talk about.
Max Fried missed time.
The list is shorter if you say who was healthy, as you mentioned, with Olson and Ozuna. There is so much that they have to overcome. And I know that Braves fans are down right now, and some are giving Alex Anthopoulos a lot of slack because of where they're at right now. But you got to think, it's actually quite impressive that they're still in the playoff race after all of the things that are going down this season. Austin Riley, though, is huge. You don't have Matt Adams move to first, and then so you can move Matt Olson to third base, right? You don't have that. So
the Freddie Freeman as third baseman experiment that lasted for 2 weeks. He was fine at third. Matt Adams just forgot how to hit, and so they put Freddie back first.
100%. 100%. I like the pickup for Gio Urshela, if that's actually going to become official. I know that that's still in the works as we're talking this morning, but I like that pickup because the internal options, and you wrote a really good piece about that yesterday on BravesToday.com, the internal options aren't there, Lindsey. They're really not there.
Yeah, Atlanta, it feels like every year their kind of game plan has been, we need one high-level infield backup, right? We need somebody who we can plug in because Ozzie Albies has been hit by pitches and has missed time, it feels like, the last 3 or 4 years. He's missed a couple weeks every single time, right? And they picked up Whit Merrifield when he was jettisoned from the Philadelphia Phillies. He's playing second base every day. Guess what? He's batting .236 with an OPS over 700. It's not what Ozzie Albies would have done, but it's a lot better than some of the internal options. Like, Atlanta used Zach Short at third base while Austin was out with that intercostal strain. And in 18 games, he batted .140. And your options in the minor league system, none of them are on the 40-man roster. But yeah, I break it down in the piece. It is Brian Anderson bringing him back. It is Zach Short. It is Alejo Lopez. I mean, you don't have a ton of really good. David Fletcher is working as a knuckleballer in Double A, but he is playing infield every other day, and you could bring him up, I guess, but it's nothing's great. And so Gio Urshela feels like this has more potential than any other option. But the thing to me is just to lose Austin Riley, right? He's batting 256 with a 783 OPS. But outside of Ozuna, it feels like he's been the most consistent performer this season. He hasn't been as good as he historically has been, but he hasn't dealt with the drastic up and down swings that the rest of the roster has, right? Matt Olson is having a dreadful year. He's batting 230. He's got just over 20 home runs. Again, a guy who hit 54 last season, right? His slugging percentage is like 423, and it was over 600 last year. So losing Riley hurts. Losing his defense hurts. Losing his offense hurts. You can't replace... Alex Anthopoulos has said this. You can't replace an all-star at this time of year. But I do think if they're able to get Gio Urshela, it's a higher floor and higher ceiling option than anybody else they had, than Luke Williams, than plugging somebody in at second, moving Whit Merrifield to third. Like, I do feel like this is probably the best option you have, and better than nothing, right? And so I'm supposed to be impartial, right? Because I cover this team, you know, as a beat writer. This feels like this is kind of insurmountable. Like, if I had to put money down right now on who would get a wild card spot in the National League, I would hesitate before I put money down on Atlanta saying, yes, they can do it. And that's frustrating, right? But I also don't remember a team in recent franchise history that's been as injured as this one. They have had just the worst injury luck in all of baseball. And I think a lot of this too is these injuries keep happening right before another guy comes back. And they have not had the entire lineup from opening day in a game since opening day. There's been somebody missing from that opening day lineup every single game of the year because of the way these injuries have staggered. And to even still be in the playoffs right now, to season end of the day, to be in the playoffs, I think is miraculous and shows like how good the remaining players are, how good the organizational depth was. But I think you've just reached a point where, I mean, it's just incredibly hard to fix it. If you look at if Urshela signs, let's say he plays the series opener against the Phillies tonight, and we'll have more about that Braves-Phillies series in happy hour this afternoon. But if Urshela plays tonight, three of your starting nine were picked up mid-season after being DFA'd by their original teams. And, like, I can't think of the last World Series contender that's been in that situation.
Right, yeah, and I can't think of any team that had playoff success with the amount of injuries that they've had from their squad, from impactful players that they've messed with this season. So
yeah you're not losing like a depth infielder. You're losing Austin Riley, a guy who has MVP finishes in the last couple seasons.
Yeah, 100%. Austin Riley is going to be a huge hit. I know his bat, as you mentioned, has not been as big as it's been lately, but that defense is going to be huge. And it's going to impact him getting a Golden Glove this year too, which really bugs me because I think he was on pace for it. I really do. But he was also batting a lot better in the month of August. 529 slug, Lindsay. You're not going to get that from any third baseman that you pick up right now. Gio Urshela does not have that type of bat. Maybe he can prove us wrong. I mean, Whit Merrifield did, so maybe they can. But we'll see. It's going to be a tough series against the Phillies starting tonight. Again, as you mentioned, we're going to have happy hour. It's going to come out at 3 p.m. Eastern today, so be sure to tune into that. It'll be on the podcast feeds as well.
Yeah. All right. So moving on from a third base injury to a potential shortstop vacancy, news came out yesterday. The Toronto Blue Jays are expected to, quote, entertain trade offers this winter for shortstop Bo Bichette. The reaction to this, it seemed to me to be, one, why did you not trade him at the deadline if that's the case? And two, does this mean that you re-sign Vlad Guerrero? I guess your thoughts on those two questions first.
I think that's a really fair way to put this, and a nice way too. I think that this management has broken down as of late. I think Ross Atkins is in trouble for building his core. And Bo Bichette obviously is a huge piece for that, but he's going to become a rental next year in the offseason. He's becoming a rental shortstop. So I agree with you. Why didn't they make that move this past trade deadline? Because that the value of them in the offseason, there's no way the value in the offseason is going to be better than what they had at the trade deadline. The infielder market at the trade deadline was actually pretty decent. I mean, look what Tommy Edman gave to the St. Louis Cardinals. One of the top
trade
deadline pitchers. Yeah. One of the top trade deadline pitchers for a guy who did not play at all this season. Now, I know Bo Bichette's also been dealing with injuries mm-hmm. this year. So that could be one of the reasons why they did not try to move him at the deadline, because he's had nagging injuries. However, it just doesn't make sense to me where, okay, this we're finally going to make this move and we're going to talk about it and let this report come out less than a month after the trade deadline. Like, there must be something where there were negotiations ongoing around trade deadline, Lindsay, and then maybe they just fell through. Maybe there's a side where they're just finally deciding, okay, we can't go any farther. Let's just go ahead and say we're going to test free agency when it does happen, and maybe we'll get a move for the rental. Maybe Bo Bichette's team knows that the Blue Jays aren't going to be competitive next year, and he wants to get moved to a rental so he can get himself a championship kind of team before he moves on and gets his payday. I don't know. But a good point, what you mentioned about Vlad Guerrero. If Bo Bichette doesn't re-sign, Vlad Guerrero has been fantastic. Yes, maybe you can go ahead and sign one of them, or maybe you just go ahead and start all over again, because Toronto is in a very tough spot.
Yeah. That division is the potential to be one of the most competitive in baseball when everybody's clicking. And I think Tampa Bay is probably closer to clicking than maybe we realize. But on Bichette for a second, I think the injuries were part of this at the trade deadline. He's batting .223 this season. His lowest batting average in any previous season was .290. He's coming off three straight MVP finishes, 12th, 11th, and 16th. You know, he hit 29, 24, and 20 homers in the last three seasons. Stole double-digit bags in two of those three, and then this year, five stolen bases, four homers, .223 average, and an OPS over 200 points lower than his previous career low. I do think the injuries probably played a part in the trade deadline, but I think, and I made a similar point to you, I made this in our First Pitch Discord yesterday, that I'm willing to bet there were negotiations that fell apart. And knowing the way that Russ Atkins likes to work, I'm willing to bet what happened was Toronto came to him about a contract extension, but they tried to price the extension off of his 24 numbers. And he said, no, I'm coming off of, like, I've been hurt this year. I'm coming off three seasons of batting almost 300 or over 300, like last year, double-digit homers, double-digit steals, a decent defender at short, and MVP finishes. I do also think, though, trying to trade Bo Bichette and then trying to re-sign Vlad is also an issue, because you lose your leverage. As long as Bo's part of the organization, you can always at least threaten Vlad with, well, we'll take this money and go offer it to Bo and see who signs, right? At the same time, I don't necessarily know if I want to re-sign Vlad Guerrero. I know he's been hot this month. He's batting .317 right now. He's had stretches where he's been bad long enough where I would be hesitant about absolutely breaking the bank for him, right? I want to pay him as an above average player. I don't want to pay him as a star. And I worry a guy with a second place MVP finish and a weird 2021 season where they played a bunch of games at a AAA ballpark, I worry that he would want to get paid as one of the top first basemen in baseball. And I think I'm a level below that. And so I think at the end of the day, Toronto either makes a mistake and gives Vlad too much money, or they do, like you said, they just kind of blow it up, get assets for both of these guys and kind of start over. The issue you have is you have a veteran pitching staff, right? Do you start trading Kevin Gausman? Do you move some of these other veterans if you do that? I don't know. But either way, Toronto's got to figure out what's going on, because I don't necessarily, like, I think Bo's the one to keep of those two. And if you're not going to keep him, I don't think you could overpay for Vlad to compensate for that.
If I'm in Ross Atkins' shoes, consider me the shadow GM, if you will, of the Toronto right. Blue Jays. If I'm going to be that, I'm making those moves. I'm rebuilding, because I don't think with this team you have now, you're going to be able to be competitive in the AL East. And if Bo Bichette moves on and you have a deteriorating rotation that is, you know, depreciating as we go, how old right. this we'll go ahead and look at the St. Louis Cardinals right now. Okay. So if the Blue Jays are in the same spot, if your highest paid player is a up and down performance of a first baseman, I don't think you're going to be able to do what you can do in this AL East. I think you have to take a step back and reset, even if that is upsetting your fan base a little bit, moving on from Vlad Guerrero, who's probably the most polarizing figure for Toronto since when, Lindsay? It's been a very long time since they've had a guy that has been as popular as Vlad Guerrero. I think that has to come into consideration if you're Ross mm-hmm. Atkins, but I don't think it will.
Yeah. This is just a joke, but Vlad Guerrero on the Yankees and Bo Bichette on the Dodgers is going to be amazing next year. Okay. Speaking of those Dodgers,
I don't know why they didn't make the trade in the first place. The Dodgers could have make. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, we can
have the Dodgers needed a shortstop. Yeah. And right. they did get a shortstop, or multiple guys who could play shortstop throughout the course of the year. And last night they got one of those players from the trade deadline back. They activated Tommy Edman. They activated third baseman Max Muncy. And this is Edman's first action of the year. This is Muncy's first action, I think, since April, maybe. It was an oblique issue. And then he had a rib problem in the middle of his rehab. To make room on the roster, they DFA'd Nick Ahmed, and they optioned Andy Pages, the outfielder, back down to Oklahoma City, because Edman's going to play center field. Last night, Max Muncy plays third base, bats seventh. Tommy Edman bats ninth. Muncy hits a homer, two RBIs. Edman goes 1-for-3, steals a base. Is the Dodgers lineup at this point with these nine guys? I mean, Ohtani leading off, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, who's playing through a finger issue right now. Looking at this, Teoscar Hernandez cleaned up, Gavin Lux, Will Smith, Max Muncy, Miguel Rojas, Tommy Edman. Is this a good enough lineup for the Dodgers to hold off the Padres and the Diamondbacks and win the West? I think I know what you're going to say.
I'm going to lean towards no, but I will make this caveat, Lindsay. If Gavin Lux continues the performance, the plate that he has had as of late, and you get a solid performance from Max Muncy out of the seven hole against right-handed hitters, this might be the most dangerous lineup in baseball. This might be the most the lineup that we were expecting to see after all these free agent pickups and saying, okay, this is the Los Angeles Dodgers that we expected to see all season long. It never happened because of injuries. And then, by the way, you got Tommy Edman just sitting in nine, who is I think he's a very underrated leadoff hitter, but you put him as a second leadoff. I think that is an amazing lineup. So if you can get Gavin Lux to continue on, because there was some question marks at the beginning of the season, looks like he's starting to figure it out. If you can get that, then I think that they will be able to hold off the Diamondbacks and the Padres. A lot of ifs, though. However, there's a lot of ifs across the rest of the NL West, especially with the Diamondbacks, which we'll talk about later on the show. The Padres are tearing it up. Jackson Merrill, I think, might actually get into consideration for that NL Rookie of the Year. I think
he's going to have push a whole games, other... yeah.
I think it's really going to happen. But if I have to say right now, I think the Dodgers still are going to be in trouble. I think this division is not over. I think it might be one of the last divisions called, because there are just so many tough teams in this division that are going to give them a run for their money. And it's just, they just have too much to, they have too much to go against them to let that happen. I will say this. They played against the Seattle Mariners, and I know we're talking about the Dodgers, but I got to put this out here. Since June 18th, the Mariners have lost 15 games in the standings. 15 games. You know, the only team that is worse than that? The Chicago White Sox, who have lost 18 games in the standings. So put that in consideration. The White Sox are only, really, since June 18th, three games worse than the Seattle Mariners. Insane.
Gross. To your Gavin Lux point, early July, right before the All-Star break, He's batting 207. Okay. Since then, so starting July 11th, and I don't know why I picked July 11th and not right after the All-Star break, but either way, since July 11th, he's batting 362 with a 1.86 OPS. He's hit 7 homers, 33 games. He's only struck out 29 times. He's got 17 extra base hits out of his 38 hits in that span. So that's kind of the impact that he's having there. Scored 16 runs, so he's scoring, in essence, once every other game. And I feel like the Dodgers are doing, they're 19-14 in that stretch. I feel like they're doing much better with all of these guys in there. I do think ultimately for the Dodgers, this having this offense back together is great. It's going to come down to the pitching, right? So many guys have been out injured. Question, when you get Yamamoto back, 60-day IL. When do you get Tyler Glasnow back on the 15-day IL? There's so many guys. Like, your rotation right now, Gavin Stone was great last night. Struck out a ton. You should expect that against the Mariners. They lead baseball on strikeouts like every year. But like right now, your rotation, if the playoff season series started today, your rotation is like Gavin Stone, Clayton Kershaw, James Paxton, and then maybe Walker Buehler, who has an ERA of 6 in 9 starts. Like, I mean, Bobby Miller, ERA of 8. I think they sent him down. Like, you've got questions about the pitching. Now, Glasnow should be back. Yamamoto might be back. But they've had as many injuries on the pitching side as Atlanta's had on the position player side. And I think that's going to be the big, ultimately where this team ends up in the postseason. Where their season ends depends on the pitching, not so much on the lineup.
And one of those guys you mentioned aren't even with the team anymore. Remember that? James Paxton, the DFA.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Paxton's with Boston now.
Golly. Even more of a depth issue. Even more of a
depth issue. Forgot about that. I completely forgot about that.
Remember, folks, this is first pitch. So, you know, coffee is always needed. So,
My gosh. Sorry.
I'm
so embarrassed about that. Yeah, I forgot about that.
You're good. However, let's be more embarrassed. Laugh at him in the comments.
Flaherty. They traded for Flaherty too. Stone, right. Kershaw, Flaherty is probably your 1-3 for the postseason
easily
right now. But it's like, is that enough? Can Kershaw fix his October issues this year? He didn't get out of the first inning last year against the Diamondbacks.
I like the fact that Kershaw, it's crazy to say, I like the fact that Kershaw did not pitch until late July because I think that's going to help him in the postseason. That's when I need him the most. And that's, it's proven it right now. There was this huge question at the beginning of the season with all the pitchers they had on their roster. I remember in the preseason, in spring training, when they did the in-depth looks on MLB Network about the Dodgers rotation, and they'd have like 10 names on there. Now you're trying to find 4 because of the injuries. And Clayton Kershaw is one of those guys. It's exactly the reason why they kept him and signed him to the 1-year deal, even though they knew he wasn't going to pitch till this time, because they knew they were going to need him. Injuries happen in baseball. I don't think they expected it to be this many. Same with the Atlanta Braves. However, that's where we're at. But this team, unlike the Braves, I still find as a World Series favorite, and I think they still can get it done because they have what it takes still. It's just crazy.
It's easier to piece together pitching with a strong bullpen than it is to piece together a lineup. I will say, just for fun, we're way over on time, but Clayton Kershaw's career in the postseason, 32 starts, 39 appearances, 194 and a third inning. This is the full season of results. 13-13 record, 4.49 ERA. So the different guy in the postseason than he's been in the regular season. Okay. Quick pitch. We're going to have to go a little bit faster than normal because, like I said, we are running behind today. We've already spent a lot of time on all these topics. Minor league update. Chase DeLauder, outfielder for the Cleveland Guardians, promoted to AAA Columbus. Is there a chance we see him in the majors this season?
You know what? There's a possibility for a chance, but I hope they hold off because he had such a tough stretch at the beginning of his minor league career. He's finally starting to get up there. I think injuries were one of the biggest concerns why that happened for him. I loved watching him at JMU. Being a guy who lived in Virginia Beach for a long time, got to watch JMU Old Dominion games all the time. So I'm rooting for him. I hope he gets a good chance in 2025. Dude's a specimen, 6'4", 235. But I want to see that happen next year, not this year. I want them to take their time.
Yeah. I think it depends on Lane Thomas. 16 games since the trade deadline. He's batting 113.
Terrible. I think he's the worst trade deadline pickup.
He has 6 hits and 53 at-bats since being picked up. So if he doesn't figure it out, they may be desperate for something if they try to hold on to the division. Okay. Corey Seager hits 2 home runs in his first 2 at-bats against the Pirates. Same team who was sending out Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer on rehab starts this week. Is it too little too late for the Rangers in the playoff race?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're like 12 and a half games behind. It's definitely too late, but how cool is it to see Seager do good things, even though that they're still behind there and they're going to be falling off. But the biggest thing out of this whole thing is Max Scherzer said he wanted to pitch in 2025. He wanted to move forward, and it won't be just out of an injury stint. We're actually going to see him pitch, and then we're going to see Jacob DeGrom throw for the first time in 2024. That's regardless of where they're at in the playoffs. That's good baseball to me, Lindsay.
Jacob DeGrom's on the short list of guys who baseball's better when they're in it. Mike Trout, Jacob DeGrom. Like, baseball's better when these guys are on the field. So excited to have him back. All right. Ketel Marte finally goes on the injured list after more than a week with this ankle issue. Is this the last straw for the Arizona Diamondbacks losing an MVP candidate in Ketel Marte?
You know, I'm hesitant to say this. And the reason behind it, I don't know exactly who's going to fill his spot in the infield. However, Christian Walker got hurt. Josh Bell did a good job filling in. Gabriel Moreno got hurt. And Adrian Del Castillo has been fantastic for the Diamondbacks at 1.072 OPS. Had an amazing game last night. So Ketel Marte, I hope that they are very slow to get him back into the race. I was hoping that they'd do that last time. They brought him in a little too quick, in my opinion. He got hurt too fast. But I'm hesitant to say that this is over for them because all the injuries that we thought were going to be a concern, they've had good depth and good replacements. So you got to assume they're going to do that again.
Yeah. Couple quick, giving some guys some flowers, had a couple walk-offs last night. Catcher Yanye Diaz had a walk-off for the Astros. Francisco Alvarez had a walk-off for the Mets. Which one of those is at the end of the day we're going to look back and say that was an important win?
Oh man. In that case, it gotta be Alvarez because what he did, I mean, it was iconic. It was one of those iconic things you look back on. If you're a Mets fan, you're trying to get into the playoff race. You're a game and a half behind the Braves right now, who are just got dealt with another injury. Alvarez, who's also dealt with injuries this year, he's coming back. I think that's the most clutch hit, but I have to say, for Yanner Diaz, it was a very crucial redemption for him because he got hurt with a pitch timer. He called timeout twice in an at-bat, got ruled out with runners in scoring position. Astros did not score in that inning. He comes back and does a walk-off homer. So I will say that one was a good case for redemption, but Alvarez definitely the most clutch hit moving forward, and it will have the most impact for the playoffs.
Agreed. Oh, there we go. Giving a team their flowers at the very end here, the Oakland A's are no longer in last place, 54-71. They are a game ahead of the Los Angeles Angels in the AL West. That offense has not been bad down the stretch. All these youngsters in there starting to play. I mean, Shea Langeliers, Lawrence Butler's look good in the outfield. Like, that offense is no longer a complete pushover. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. So shout out to the A's for just kind of fixing some of their stuff there. This has been First Pitch for Tuesday, August 20th. I'm Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. Follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. Means a ton to help folks discover the show. If you're on YouTube, leave us a comment down below. Subscribe to the channel. Click the notification bell so you know when we go when we drop new episodes, which happens at least once a weekday, if not twice. Today on Happy Hour, you're going to get a series preview of the Atlanta Braves and the Philadelphia Phillies. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.